From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable. It's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Midnight Movie Cowboys for this week. This is Stuart here. You're hearing my voice, so that means that there is no Hunter. And there actually won't be no Hunter for the next 3 or 4 weeks. But I do have John here with me, as always, faithful sidekick. How you going, my friend?
Yeah, pretty good.
Anyway, the deal with Hunter is, for those of you who don't know, he's getting married, God, basically any day now from the point of time of us recording this. And, of course, so he's got all that on his plate, preparations, you know, the wedding and stuff, the honeymoon. So, you know, we'll cut Hunter loose for a few weeks, let him go and do all that. And John and I will run the show here, but, just on behalf of myself and behalf of John and all the listeners as well, Hannah, brother, all the best for the wedding for you and your lovely bride-to-be, Amy. And, enjoy yourself and hope all goes well. But, okay, getting back to this week's episode, we have got a couple of things that John and I are going to talk about. One of the things is we're going to cover a little bit in part the film Guesthouse Paradiso, or what's it known there, John? Is it known as the bottom movie there, or Guesthouse Paradiso?
It was never released over here.
Oh, okay.
Never. As far as I can't trace a video release. Didn't even get dumped on video. The IMDb claims Universal released it over here, but I can find no record of I had never heard of it until you mentioned it, like a few months back
when we
did our British comedy episode.
Yeah, and the other thing we're going to just talk about a bit is the recent announcement by Apple to cease music downloads or music download purchases as of March 2019. You can call this what's the word I'm looking for, John? Is it an addendum to our Dawn of the Dead format episode we did?
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
They've released, I guess, sort of a referendum. So this is an addendum for what they've done.
Yeah.
So
for those of you who don't know, Apple has, I don't know if it's been officially announced or it's very widely rumored, the old rumor is fact sort of thing, that as of March 2019, music downloads will be no more from the Apple Store. And the question I was bouncing back and forth with John was, well, if that happens, where do bands go from here, John? Well, as you know, CDs are dying, except if you're Eddie Trunk. He's the only one keeping the bloody format alive. Vinyl doesn't take that much of a market percentage, does it?
I think a lot of the hype about vinyl sales is greatly exaggerated.
Yeah, I think so.
And I don't see how you could push a new band through vinyl. Because every time I go to Barnes & Noble or Target, one of these odd places where they, very mainstream places where they sell overpriced vinyl for like $30 a record. It's always the Beatles, Steve Miller Band, some heavy metal, limited edition, Black Sabbath. I mean, it's just old mainstream stuff. Like there's no new bands there, you know.
You know what's odd as well? When they do the reprints of these albums, I was at my local JB with my brother a couple of months back, and they're starting to bring the vinyl back in, these reissues, and the way they've done the covers, like the reprints of the covers that originally were, are just terrible. They don't look as clear. The contrast for the one that stood out for me, like, was the one my brother saw, was the Metallica Master of Puppets. He goes, that looks like shit. I said, how do you stuff it up? It's just a bunch of, those who know the cover of the album, is just a bunch of cemetery crosses on it. And also, the one they had in there as well was the Pulp Fiction soundtrack. And it was so bled. The reds had bleeded in so much into the cover. It was just, Oh, it looked terrible. For those, you know, the iconic picture of Uma Thurman on the Pulp Fiction soundtrack and slash VHS cover, the original poster art. It was so bad. But yeah, so the vinyl market, you know, is a small percentage, but the iTunes market seemed to have a lion's share for quite a number of years there.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about it the other day. So where do bands go from here? Okay, they can sell on places like Bandcamp, which is where I get my stuff of Dream Machines. I buy their stuff of Bandcamp. Mm-hmm. But that's only a small area as well. It's a small... You've got to really find it. So what do they do? You can't sell them out of the back of a truck at gigs. I mean, you can, but how much are you going to sell at a gig, really? 20?
Yeah.
A night?
My guess was maybe they're going to depend on things like Spotify, which pay nothing in royalties, but might be a way for a band to catch people's attention.
I just don't know. Yeah, they can get their attention via that, but how do they get paid?
Yeah.
Business,
man. It's so messed up.
I just can't believe they shot themselves in the foot like this, really. You know, the problem is, I've said it for the number of years, I don't know about the US, but CDs have priced themselves out.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I mean, I've never understood why, and we've brought this rant up before, and I'll bring it up again briefly now. Why the hell is music so expensive?
I've never figured that out, because when I was young and was kind of forced, you know, dragged kicking and screaming to get into CDs around like 1989 or 90. I just remember always reading articles, CD prices will get cheaper in the future. And they never really did.
No, they didn't. Yeah. I mean, I looked at time I was with my brother a couple of months back. I was looking at, who was I looking at for the latest album by Chris Isaak. It was?
Mm-hmm.
It was like $26.99. Are you serious?
Jeez.
That's ridiculous. I mean, yet they got in the movie bins, you know, a film that would have had a budget of, say, $200 million, going for $9.99. I can't work it out.
Yeah.
So I think the record companies have done it to themselves.
They did. The music industry kind of cut its own throat. They shot themselves in the foot so many times. Really, since the 90s. When I think there was a headline, and of course a listener may know more about this than I can remember, but like Garth Brooks was pushing for shutting down used CD stores because he was getting no royalties, and I guess he had gotten the ear of one of the record companies, maybe MCA, mm-hmm. Universal, who he was signed to, like, to go against the used CD store industry, and it was crazy, and it got a very negative reaction, and that PR kind of disappeared after a couple of months. And this is all before internet, by the way. This is what you had to read about this stuff in music magazines.
Yeah,
but yeah, he was really pissy about that, which other bands were laughing about it, and it's like, gee, I only get like 80 cents for every CD sold, and they're in stores for like $18.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a good and bad side to used CDs. I mean, somebody may pick one up, and, you know, of an artist, and you know, they'll go, oh, I've heard of this band, it's $3 in the used CD store, I like it, I'll give it a try, I should say. They like it, and they go out to the regular stores and go and buy the rest. I mean, you know, it's like everything has its good and bad sides to it, but I've never ever understood the whole, you know, we need to charge maximum price for a CD, which costs a hell of a lot less to manufacture than what a Blu-ray does. And, you know, I've just never understood albums don't cost $50 million to make.
Yeah.
So, the music.
Well, the mechanics are split to, like, songwriters, probably producers, and the record company itself, but the bulk of that profit is going to the record company.
Yeah, but there was a long time, a big time there where bands just didn't need record companies. They were starting to do the whole independent thing. Mm-hmm. Aerosmith was one of them. They were selling their own stuff online directly from them, and they were making way more than they ever could going through a friggin' record company.
Coldplay did it, for an example of a newer band that's big with kids.
Um, Yeah, that was a question I wanted to pose towards yourself was, I don't know where bands go now. I really feel sorry for bands these days. You know, they can, they got to market their own stuff on their own websites and all that, but yeah, I mean, if you can't browse them on the Apple Store, you can have a hard time finding new bands unless it's just by strict chance you hear them somewhere.
Yeah, it's like our old favorites. They really don't put out new albums. They just sell greatest hits packages and such, you know.
Yeah.
They like Kiss. They realize, I think Gene Simmons, it's set to a point, nobody really wants new music from us. They just want the old hits. So that's what they sell. And I think that's with a lot of bands, that they kind of like, okay, nobody really cares about any new original material. We're just going to do the greatest hits. And I've noticed like somebody like Engelbert Humperdinck has put out CDs that you could only get through his website or buy at his shows. So he's kind of doing it on his own, because it's like, why does he need to bother with selling to, when his fans are going to come see him live no matter what? He's so old.
That's right.
You know, they're going to come out and see him and probably wonder where the 8-tracks are.
Grandma walks in. I remember them square things you used to have. What do they call them?
Reel to reels.
Yeah.
Although Jello by Afro had said he always heard reel to reels were great sound quality.
Oh, they were. Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, I talked about those with him, and he said their sound quality on them is said to be fantastic, but he never got into collecting them.
I should ask my brother if he's got the old reel to reel that Dad had. He may do. He just gave me the old equalizer that we had from, God, like 81, 82, and I plugged it in. That thing still thumps like a motherfucker, I tell you. So there's another topic for another time, John. The quality of products, home theater, home entertainment products, compared to how they were back in the 80s, when they were a lot more durable.
Yeah.
Might have weighed 10 times more and been about 5 times the size, but they lasted.
Yeah, I still have a component system from the 1990s. Still works.
Yeah.
Still produces fantastic sound. I haven't upgraded anything modern. I didn't get a sound bar for my TV or anything. And I have a Sony turntable that I think was bought in like 97.
Yeah.
And that's what I use.
Sound bars are not what they're cracked up to be, man. We've got one in the house. Yeah. I'm like, nah, give me a... I mean, yes, do they help compact or tidy up the living room from having 5.1 speakers everywhere? Yes, they do. Do they sound as good as that? Absolutely not.
And I got a cheap one that I think was manufactured by Polaroid, or at least they put their name on it. And they bought it at Big Lots for like $30. And that's really what I needed to make the TV upstairs sound better for, like, when my kid is watching, I don't know, Harry Potter movies or whatever on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
And you can actually, because the sound mix, we talked about this before, the audio mix on Warner Brothers Blu-rays and DVDs is awful. And you really need to have that enhanced, because the dialogue will be super low, and then the sound effects will just blow your ears out.
Yeah.
Suddenly, it's the weirdest thing. It's like they have no clue how to mix those. And it's funny, because that's a common complaint from friends of mine when they'll watch any Warner Brothers DVD, is they'll talk about how bad the mix is.
Oh, those first Blu-ray Wave titles that came out were just all the upgraded to 5.1s were just horrible mixes. Horrible.
Yeah.
The ones that did from, you know, 2-channel stereo, and even some of the old mono ones are like, why? Yeah. And it's another rant we've been on before, but we just got to keep bringing it up because these companies are not listening. If you want to do 5.1, 7.1 mixes of the French Connection, do it. But give me the original mono as well. Let me choose.
Yeah. Eric Zaldivar, our sometime guest, was telling me that he watched El Cid on Laserdisc at a friend's house.
Yeah.
And said the sound blows away any recent home video, like DVD release or Blu-ray release. He said, why is the sound so fantastic on old Laserdisc? And I said, that's because they were still using analog sound quality.
Yeah. I remember clearly the Batman Returns Laserdisc I had back in 93, which, you know, I spoke about the film recently with you guys, and I was not very favorable about it. I did not like it. But back then, I cranked that thing up, and as what's that term they use? Like a demo for other people at Laserdisc, and their fucking heads would just fly back. They couldn't believe the sound in it.
Oh, the sound on my Crow Laserdisc. Jesus. It was yeah, incredible.
I think I had that as well, the Crow one. But the Blu-ray of it is still great. Still holds up that film. Still holds up, in my opinion.
It's hard to watch, and it's even tougher to watch because I've actually met James O'Barr and hung out with him for a little while. And he really wishes that movie was never made because it basically killed Brynn and Lee. So he's always felt guilty about it. He said, I wish I'd never created the Crow.
But he can't take the responsibility on his shoulders for Brandon Lee's death. I mean,
definitely takes the guilt over it, even though he really had nothing to do with that being his fault. But
you know. No, he didn't. No, it's no. He, James O'Barr, no, it's not your fault.
Yeah,
yeah. Dentist. Yeah, who knows of that thing? But mate, I don't know what we do. You know, I for any bands out there starting up, I really truly feel sorry for them.
Yeah,
I just don't know what their avenue is going to be now.
Are we going to possibly have good bands in the future? I don't know, because everybody, you know, like I always say, this generation, this coming up, they're not really inspired by the old stuff. They're not inspired by Elvis or Sabbath or even probably the Ramones. They're inspired by, you know, Linkin Park.
Well, sound wise, I don't think we're ever going to get any bands that are going to be groundbreaking and new. I mean, I think we've covered every avenue of sound and style that we possibly can. However, I mean, we're all fans of the Darkness.
Yeah, true.
And, I mean, there are bands still kicking around, thank God. I mean, there's good bands out there, but they're just buried away in a pub or a club somewhere. And
right.
The chance of them are breaking out are really next to none.
That's what I noticed when I visited Nashville years ago. I took a vacation, and you can just walk down Music Row, spend an hour inside all these bars on Music Row, and you're going to see a band playing for tips. And like one bar would have the country pop band, you know, playing in that style of the Dixie Chicks or whatever, who were big at the time. Or, and then you go to the next one and you get your kind of alt depression country type of, you know, no depression country where it's like somebody sounds like Lucinda Williams, and then you go into another one and it's somebody trying to sound like the next Merle Haggard. And it's just, it's ongoing, and there's plenty of talent there. It's just who's going to get that lucky break and who do they think they can make money off of. But it's all in a tradition, you know, in all those styles.
I love to go to Nashville. Just,
it's fun. Yeah. I think it's greatly underrated. Like, people rip on it or whatever. Like, it's like some country version of Disney World. I'm like, that's great. Are you kidding me? It's like,
I mean, you could go into Nashville. You tell me that you can go into Nashville, eat some barbecue, and go and see a band and drink a few beers. I mean, yeah, that's a horrible night out.
Well, these are the type of assholes who are always like, no, man, I'm not gonna get a room at the Howard Johnson. I'm gonna get at this old Fleabag motel because it's got character. It's like they think they're supposed to have a frustrating time. You know, that's hipsterish with them. So yeah. Nashville's no good.
Have fun sharing that room with the mice and rats.
Right.
Making hipsters. But yeah. Now look, man, there is good bands out there. They're everywhere. You've got to just come across them, I guess. But well, I mean, the days of the bands breaking through and having major impact culturally, I think they're pretty much dead and gone.
Yeah, you're not going to get another Beatles or Stones that everybody's listening to.
No.
Or you're not going to get a James Brown.
Or Alice Cooper or somebody like that.
No, you're absolutely not. You're not going to get a Zeppelin that's going to just be that big event band that everybody loves, and it's just not going to happen. Or Black Sabbath with a million imitators. Or, you know, it's I just don't see anything going crazy like it used to.
Although there was a band out there from Scotland, of all places, called, was it Ironclaw? Who were,
Ironclaw?
Yeah, I think it was Ironclaw or something like that, who were doing this Sabbath-sounding stuff around the same time as Sabbath. I don't know if they even predated them by any chance. I don't know.
It's possible, because there's some amazing groups that, you know, it's like they were around that same time, and they weren't necessarily inspired by Sabbath. They were more like, they'd be signed to like Deep Purple's record label. You know, there were a lot of good bands signed to that label. And
right.
you listen to them, like, okay, there was one, I posted this to the group, but I guess I'll announce it on the podcast. There's this, there was this band called Bullet. Like, they put out the CD is called Entrance to Hell, and apparently it's a alternate raw mix of an album they actually released with Deep Purple Records, and it is amazing. You can listen to the whole thing on YouTube.
Shit.
It kicks ass, and it was probably released the same year as Paranoid or something, you know?
Shit, I've never heard of it.
Oh, yeah, and it's made up of members. I think they were from one of those bands. Trying to remember. I'm looking at them right now. It was some guys from a former Atomic Rooster band members, John Ducan and Paul Hammonds. And then they had John Gustafson, who was in bands like the Mercy Beats and Quatermass. And it was formed in 1970. And they signed with Purple Records. And it turns out there was another group in existence then from the U.S. called Bullet. And under threat of legal action, they changed their name to Hard Stuff, which is a terrible name for a band.
Yeah.
And but the CD has been issued under the name Bullet. And it's titled Entrance to Hell. It is amazing. Go listen to it on YouTube. It will knock your balls off. And there is you can buy an MP3 for $8.99 from Amazon Prime or Amazon. And there's probably an iTunes availability somewhere. I haven't bothered with iTunes in a while.
Okay. Hold it right there. Do you think Amazon is perhaps the next or the only real chance bands have got now with iTunes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I really think Amazon. Yeah.
Because they're pushing their streaming music platform as an alternative to Spotify. Like, okay. They really push it. They don't put everything in Prime streaming for you to listen to music-wise. But you'll notice, like, oh, but if you join their music streaming service, then you get access to tons of stuff.
Okay.
And I'm sure they do an app for smartphones and all sorts of stuff. I haven't made that tech leap. I'm still, like, 20 years behind on that. But, intentionally, yeah. So I think we're kind of over... We're over electronic tech, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, going back to that band Bullet you were saying, there's also a band out there. I can't remember the name of the bloody band who did a whole kabuki makeup thing before Kiss.
I bet I've heard of them too, because I think I remember reading about a band doing something like that.
Yeah, I don't know if they were Japanese or something like that. I just
It's like the Hollywood Brats were doing the kind of quasi transvestite thing before the New York Dolls are at the same time, and were not inspired by them.
They
later became the punk band The Boys. They morphed into them, and The Boys are really good, and the Hollywood Brats were really good. So it's funny how there were all these bands kind of a spontaneous parallel originality in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just the way things are going to go.
Yeah. Oh, here we go. That band I'm talking about from Scotland. Yeah, Iron Claw. Two separate words. But yeah, started 1969, around the same time as Sabbath.
But Iron Claw. Okay.
Yeah, check them out. They are on YouTube, the last time I saw, and yeah, they're...
dope.
Pretty damn good, from memory.
Yeah, shit.
But, yep, bands out there... I wish you all the very best. There's got to be a way for them.
I think this is stuff we like the heavy guitar rock or whatever. I just looked up Iron Claw. Man, there's a lot here to listen to. The type of stuff we love, I don't see anything new or innovative coming out for us, but we'll probably get the good kiddie garage bands that impress us for a couple of years, and then they fade off and do whatever they do. Like... Hey, I like that Vine single when it came out. You know, it's like, I thought they were going to be huge, and then I saw them live and realized they were never going to be huge.
It's like that band that Eddie Trunk was, right? Who was it? Oh, the Struts. Oh, look, the Struts. He kept talking about this band from the UK called the Struts, going, oh, they're the saviors of rock and blah. Okay, I thought, that's a big call. I'm going to check it out. And, man, I didn't get it. I don't know.
Struts. It sounds like Cheap Trick woke up with a monster era.
Oh, God.
That's exactly why they won't save rock and roll. They appeal to your obscurest taste. But I remember when they were calling the Strokes the savior of rock and roll, and I thought the first album was okay, but I was like, they're not going to cause any real buzz, you know?
No. Putting that tag onto a band, the saviors of rock and roll, is a big, big call. I mean,
White Stripes. It's like, yeah, big for a couple of years, but
yeah. I've brought it before on the show, and I'll do it again for those who have not caught the episode, because it was a number of years back when I went and saw a band here in Melbourne called Hellenic Zeal, and they deliberately labeled themselves the Saviors of Rock. I thought, all right, you better be good. They were playing locally, so I went down and caught them, and they stunk. They were all these hippies who looked down at their shoes and dressed like they had $4 to their name, and every song was just dour and droll and just miserable. It was like a fucking death dirge.
Well, I really loved the Helicopters. I thought they could save rock and roll. They didn't. Then I really loved the Hives. I thought they were going to be big. Man, they never really broke out of the... Although it looked like they were going to, and they just never broke out big. And it's funny. Like, every couple of years, would be these bands are like, well, these guys, these will be the ones. And then they weren't. Even the Darkness, I thought they were going to just set the world on fire.
Exactly. I was just going to say the Darkness got labeled that back in 05. And, or 03, I should say, sorry. And... I mean, like I said before in the episode of The Darkness, I think they're better now, that second wave of them, than the way we were in the first part. Even though as perfect an album as Permission to Land is, I like their stuff now. It's a lot heavier and less falsetto glam.
Yeah, well, they're not trying to get on the radio anymore.
No. And what radio stations these days play new music? Really
don't. I just discovered that we have a free form rock pop music station on our FM, and apparently it's been there for like 2 years. I just finally discovered it on my car stereo, and it'll play something like the Dave Clark Five, and then it'll play some new indie hipster thing, but it's unique at least. But the problem is, you don't really, it's not like unlike the rock stations that would kind of play like, say, the Darkness song every 2 hours at least to get that song in your head. You don't get this here. You hardly get any repeats of anything. So it's kind of a little too, it's like listening to somebody's iPod mix or shuffle.
Oh, I bet you that's how they do them with those smaller stations. They just create a playlist and just hit the play button and piss off and go.
Yeah. Yeah, they do. I bet they do. They just go, smoke a joint, very likely here in Colorado. But at the station over at the smoking area, so play their tunes and just get it going.
Another good shot bands have really got these days is internet radio. But God, who the hell really listens to internet radio? I know a friend of mine does a metal show. Don't know if he still does. He's had health issues, but I know he used to do a metal show every Sunday, just broadcast from his house, and it'd be over, like, he'd have a worldwide audience. He had a fair size audience. Mm-hmm. And, Macca would play new stuff on there. I'm like, oh shit, this is pretty good. But, that's about the only chance you've really got of, doing that. But that's just a small, small percentage of your audience.
Yeah. You're not going to push the next Judas Priest with that, It's just not going to happen.
Well, speaking of Judas Priest, that latest album was just...
So you don't like it, but Hunter totally digs it, right?
Hunter digs it, and I'm sure he genuinely does dig it. I think the fact, though, is because they've gone back with producer Tom Allum has ignited a lot more excitement and spark in the release than what there really is. The opening track's good. It sounds like classic Priest, but after that... I was talking to my brother. I think it was texting my brother, and so I better listen to the new Priest. He goes, "Good luck." I said, "Oh, really?" And I got back to him like an hour later. I said, "Nah, man, I'm just He goes, "I told you." And he's a good gauge. If Jules really likes her, because he's really really tough with his what he likes and what he doesn't like. He's got a very small sort of circle of things he likes. If an album can break that circle and get into his favorites, then I'll take that on board. But I just did not like it. Didn't like it. But anyway, man, I think we'll move off of that. We've done a good solid 30-something minutes on the future bands and then their possibilities out there. But anyway, going to what I guess will now be the second half of the show is our discussion, review, whatever you want to call it, of Guesthouse Paradiso, a.k.a. the bottom movie. They do label it on the DVD. Well, they did over here and they did in the UK as well. You now, get back to what you were saying. You said it never got a release in the US?
No, there's no US release.
Shit. Yeah. I can't believe that.
In fact, while we're speaking, I'm going to do an Amazon search just to see if there was even a VHS. And I don't think it ever got released over here because Rick Mayall doesn't have the following over here to justify releasing something like that.
No, but you thought maybe we... Okay, yeah, Drop Dead Fred was a big flop, but it came out and it's...
Oh, yeah, it was hated.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like thoroughly hated and because, you know, you could probably... Okay, I just looked it up. Guesthouse Paradiso was apparently, you can get it as a UK import, which doesn't really tell anybody anything.
Wow, that's it. Okay. Yeah. So it must never have gotten a release. And if it did get a VHS release in the US, it was such a small run. Like, video stores would have had one copy. That's it. No more. No more than that.
Well, I realize with the language they use, like constantly calling Richard Twat. You know, you can't edit it for TV. It's like really tough to edit that for television because they're going to have to put it on Comedy Central, and you still have to tone down some of the humor, and you'd have to cut some stuff out of this. And I could see that being just a massive issue, even for TV sales.
Yeah. But I first saw this when it came out in the theaters.
In the theater. Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Myself, my brother. I think there was two other mates with us. Robbie was one, and our buddy Harris, who was my old roommate, and oh god, me and my brother have known him for 30-something years. We all went to see this. We were the only ones in there, John, in the theater. No one else.
Wow.
No one else. So we had free reign.
Does he have a following in Australia? The male or?
Oh yeah, of course. Vincent? Oh yeah, yeah, definitely. They were out promoting it on a television show, Channel 10, I think it was, at the time. I'm like, oh well, Bottom. I remember that show. Yeah, okay. So they got a film out for it. But even though it's strange, it's classed as the Bottom movie, but the characters' names are different. They're still Richie and Eddie, but the surnames are different. I don't know why that was. And, of course, back in the television show, they never ran a hotel. It was just them two holed up in their London flat or wherever they're at. But, yeah, so we went and saw the film in the theatres. Only ones there, and we fucking laughed our asses off. We were doubled over laughing. Yeah, that was one of the better cinema experiences I've had over the years because, it was that funny as well. Plus, I think our mate was goofing off while the trailers were on because there's no one else in there. And
Right. Yeah.
But, that was the first time I saw it and subsequently bought it on home video after that on DVD because I have all the Bottom television shows and the whole series, I should say, and the 5 live shows as well. Did you ever get through to picking up some of the live shows as well?
No, I don't have the live shows. I just have the complete series. I ordered a box set. They're not that expensive to bring in from the UK. And I've only managed to watch like 2 episodes. But
okay. Yeah.
But I hope to. I keep saying, okay, I'm going to do a binge, but I can't watch it with the kid around. And, you know, my wife's certainly not interested. So that always cuts back on viewing possibilities.
I think I said with Bottom when we did the Best of British Volume 2 that you couldn't binge watch this show.
Yeah.
You can with Bless This House easily. 3-4 episodes, you can breeze through them very quickly. Same with Love Thy Neighbor, even. You can do it on the buses. But Bottom is such an assault on the senses. 2 is about the most you can watch in a night.
If even. Yeah. Because it's a lot. It throws a lot at you.
It really does. It's like, Rick and Adrian just basically throwing shit at you for half an hour and... Did you see the 2 episodes you saw? Did you see what I'm getting at with the physical comedy?
Yeah, yeah. Like the first episode, Sex, I think, was the title. It's like right away I got it. It's like they were just doing like this hyper-violent Three Stooges, something you don't expect from English comedy, because we've kind of stereotyped it as being Fawlty Towers and Benny Hill.
Yeah, that's right. But, so the physical comedy they gave us in the television show is ramped up in the film, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, it's brutal.
It's pretty intense. But
and I could see why, it actually told me why it probably didn't get released in the U.S., because they've de-emphasized that type of humor in our comedy movie culture. It's now all smart alecks from SNL, you know, yammering on, you know, New York, East Coast, West Coast type humor, and that you couldn't see an act like the Three Stooges or even the Marx Brothers make it big today.
Just quickly, how well received was the Farrelly Brothers Three Stooges movie when it came out?
I think it just did okay.
Okay.
I don't think it like was a massive hit. I remember that those actors showed up on WWE Monday Night Raw, like hosting it, and they got massively booed.
Oh, so, Christ, really?
Yeah, I think people can... I think when you have actors who are hired basically to impersonate these old these older actors or performers, it's just, I think it can rub the casual viewer weird, you know?
Yes.
Like, okay, The Crow, going back to The Crow, yeah. They make these sequels that bomb hideously and release the third one, and the third one wasn't even released in theaters, and I think it's just because everybody identified as Brandon Lee as The Crow because he died making it, so yeah. It's offensive to cast somebody else in that role.
Plus, the films just stunk as well. I mean,
they were awful.
Like I said just previously, I really liked that first one. I watched it again about 18 months ago, and I want to see it again shortly, you know, very soon. Yeah, man, I really enjoyed it. It really held up for me. But anyway, getting back to the humor of this film, I just don't think the Americans would have got it if it had been released theatrically. They would have said, "What is this? There's these guys belting each other up, and you know, one guy gets his head run over by a truck and he's still alive."
Well, okay, you know, another thing that struck me is Americans don't want an unsympathetic comedic lead. And you have two it's like watching the villains, really.
It really is.
Like,
yes.
They're horrible and irredeemable. And I just don't think American audiences will go for watching, you know, 80 minutes of this stuff. With these two characters who were just so dislikable and just so unsympathetic, and they're just monstrous, you know, caricatures that I could easily see why this did. Universal decided, nah, we're not going to release this in the U.S.
The only thing that I think they might have missed the boat on when this was released was that when we watched it, we came out and we said, my God, that's just like a big screen version of Fawlty Towers.
Yeah.
Okay, and that could have been marketed maybe in the US alone just by saying in the same vein as Fawlty Towers. Okay, far more aggressive and violent than Fawlty Towers, yes. But basically the same setup. You got the European, the bumbling European chef, even though in Fawlty Towers it was the waiter, he was Spanish anyway, he was meant to be. And just the poor service in the hotel and the poorly run hotel and just, yeah. But so it was sort of, they took the Fawlty Towers skeletal story and fused it with Bottom.
Right.
And this was written apparently just after Rick Mayall had his quad bike accident where he was really banged up and they didn't even know if he was going to pull through. He was in the hospital for months.
Yeah.
And going by the making, I don't know if you've got the making of on your DVD.
Yeah, it's on there.
It's on there.
I saw Adrian Edmonds' stunt double doing some of his stuff while Ed was directing him.
Yes, that's right. Strange to think such a physical film, one of the lead actors could still direct it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And separate himself from what he has to be put through to just go straight back behind the camera and then start directing and making choices. So Adrian Edmondson doesn't get a lot of credit as a director. I don't think Rick Mayall really did much as a director. I know Adrian Edmondson's done quite a bit. He's done a number of the what are they called? Comic Strip Presents.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. Yeah. But so first time for you seeing it?
Yes, first time.
Yeah. Did it come with a box set, or did you buy
a
purchase?
No, I had to buy it separate. It was a cheap separate DVD.
Nice. All right. And what did you think of it?
I thought it was very funny. I didn't like it as much as the TV show that I've seen so far, because it doesn't have that surrealism.
The one
that, like that's gone. Like it tries to have somewhat of a believable setting or real world setting, even though it's really over the top. But it doesn't have like the crazy stuff.
What it does, I'll tell you, the one thing it doesn't have is it doesn't have that confined, closed in space that they have on the TV show. It's the actual opposite. Where
I don't know if you could do that in a movie. I don't know if you can have something set in an apartment and have them just brutally tear up. Like that may have been why they picked this hotel by the sea.
Yeah.
Because in England, that's probably the most like built for the big screen type of scenario you could have.
Yeah.
Wide open spaces and such.
Because their actual live shows are set, well, most of them are set just in their apartment. And it's just new gags and all that sort of stuff. So, but with the film version of Guesthouse Paradiso, they've gone the complete opposite. They've gone for this massive scope. I mean, this is a big film. It's shot in scope. It's got a huge landscape to it. The hotel is enormous. It's really well filmed. I've got to say that much. It's really well filmed. The scenic backgrounds when Adrian Edmondson's pushing that little girl on the swing, pushing her on the swing, and he's pushing her right over the side of the cliff. I mean, really, only those guys can come up with something as twisted as that. But it looks so massive, this thing, and I mean, do you have to suspend disbelief for this? Absolutely, you do. You know, it's just the toxic fish is, which is the big payoff for the film. The one woman who constantly living there, who is what's the character from Fawlty Towers? Is it
the general? The major.
The major, yeah. She's basically
like the best character in Fawlty Towers.
yeah, for sure. So basically, Fenella Fielding's character is the female equivalent of the Major from Fawlty Towers. So there's those elements sprinkled throughout the film. But if there is one thing I didn't like in this was the whole side story with the Gina Carbonara. I mean, it needs to be in there, but I didn't like the... Who's the actor? Is it Vincent Cassell?
Cassell, who really shouldn't... I like him in like serious crime films and stuff, but I don't know what he's doing in a comedy because he's got a French accent and everything, and I don't even know if he's in on the joke really, or he's trying to play it so serious that he's has you thinking he might be in on the joke, but he seemed miscast.
Yep. But that's the one when I watched this again yesterday afternoon, I'm like, I just still don't like Vincent Cassell in this film. Just don't get it.
Because he's supposed to be in some movie, trying to stab Jean Reno or something. You know, we're not supposed to be seeing him in a comedy. You know, he's got to be shooting a gun in Mazarin.
Yep. But, I still enjoy this film. I think it's, I don't know how many times I've seen it, maybe half a dozen times at least over the years. But, anyway, the premise of the film quickly is that it's Richie and Eddie running this shithole of a hotel. Called the Guesthouse Paradiso, and it's basically on the outskirts of nowhere. It's got nobody in it except Fenella Fielding. Have you ever seen her before, John?
I didn't recognize her, but that would say that I wouldn't know her if I saw her. If I looked her up and went, that's her.
She was in one of my favorite Carry On movies ever, Carry On Screaming.
Oh, I still haven't watched that.
Oh, that's I love that one.
No, Sid James in it though.
No, it doesn't matter. It's still a fun romp. It's like Carry On doing their version of a Hammer film.
Oh, okay, well I'll have to pull it. Oh, she was I was just looking her up. She was a loudspeaker announcer on The Prisoner. Never seen.
Oh, okay.
Or credit. Yeah. So, but yeah, I'll have to pull Carry On Screaming out of the box set next. Problem with having the complete Carry On in a box set is deciding what to watch next.
Oh, no.
I don't really want to watch. I don't want to watch them in order because I know I probably won't like the really early ones.
No.
You know, before they find their footing. You know. So.
Yeah. I mean, if you were to start with Carry On Sergeant being the first one, and thinking, God, there's gonna be a riot every single one of them. Not gonna happen. It's
yeah.
That Carry On. What was it? Carry On, the one we're in the fucking prehistoric times. Carry On.
I didn't even know that was existed.
Yeah, it's in
is
the
it
box.
Carry On Caveman or something?
No, it's not Carry On Caveman. It's I don't know. It's not very funny though. It's not one of the better ones.
Really, even though it's a great setup, but I'm guessing it just doesn't. Well, I was disappointed in Carry On Spying. That just wasn't as funny as I thought it was.
Yeah, that's obviously their James Bond knockoff, but it wasn't. Yeah, it just wasn't that good. Carry On Cowboy, I think it's one of the best ones out there. and the ones as well, when they get towards the very end of the 60s, towards the start of the early 70s, Carry On Girls, that's a pisser. Carry On Camping as well is great. It's
Had all the jokes ripped off for Austin Powers 2, The Spy Who Shagged Me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I bet.
All the stuff with the tent and the shadows, it's like, yeah, all of that was swiped.
Yeah. But getting back to Guest House Paradiso, so it's this miserable little hotel on the outskirts of nowhere, and a family rolls up with a young Simon Pegg as the father and his wife and two kids in there, and it's basically it's a holiday, they're on holidays, and he's picked out this shithole in the middle of nowhere, and Richie acts like he can't believe people are actually coming into the hotel because it's usually desolate and there's usually nobody there, and there's no real structure to this film, story-wise. I don't think there's even a three-act structure to this. It's just a bunch of jokes thrown in there.
Right.
A lot of violence, a lot of jokes. Rick Mal cross-dressing with a rubber suit on.
It seemed to be almost like an Inspector Clouseau type of thing, the way they were putting him in various embarrassing, shameful situations. And they're trying to stop it from being revealed when they try to grab the security tape.
Oh my God. He's got the fishing hook and he tries to grab the tape out of the guy's hand, so he grabs his nipple ring and stretches the shit out of it. Ugh.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know. But, man, look, I don't know what we can really say about this. There's not a great deal to it.
Right.
Worth a watch. Mate, where are people going to get it in the US? Where can they find it?
They're going to have to get a region-free player and order. I think a good portion of our listeners have those, but you can always go buy a Philips DVD player for about $30 from Walmart and just look up the hack code for the model, press in some numbers, and you can play anything from around the world, and you can check this out. Otherwise, there's no other way to see it. It's not on Netflix. It's not on any. I've never seen it anywhere, really.
No.
No domestic release. And another thing I realize is, like, with a lot of the often cringy humor in the movie, it's like there's no way, like, women would watch this. It's a lot of guy humor with two guys beating the shit out of each other.
Yeah.
That's a total guy thing. Like, men find that hilarious. Women do not. And, in America, successful comedies are usually date movies. Like, I think one of our highest grossing comedies is There's Something About Mary, because it's a perfect date movie and women like it.
Yeah.
And this is, like, way more jokes than that. It's way more raunchy. It's in some ways grosser, but it wouldn't make – it just wouldn't draw a dime over here because it's basically a man's comedy,
Yep.
All the brutal stuff we love. We always say girls don't like Three Stooges, and this is kind of a reminder of that.
Do you think a guy not liking Three Stooges is a bit of a test as to his masculinity?
No, because I know some guys who just don't find the Three Stooges that funny because it was something they liked when they were kids and they can't bring that humor up. They didn't grow up with that humor, or the humor didn't grow up with them. That, like, they'll prefer the Marx Brothers. And they'll sound like snobs or whatever. It's just, but I always say, I go, look, if you think the Marx Brothers are funny, or you think the Three Stooges are funny, the funniest movie is actually Hell's a Poppin', which has Olsen and Johnson. And those guys were actually, their entire style, I thought, was funnier than Three Stooges or the Marx Brothers.
Really? I just...
But you cannot buy Hell's a Poppin' in America. It's only available in the UK because apparently there's some sort of legal wrangling with the Olsen and Johnson estate about releasing Hell's a Poppin' on home video.
I could have swore I saw it over here on a...
Oh, it probably was. It's allowed. You can release it in Australia or England, but they cannot release it in America. Like in America, for the longest time, David Lee Roth said he did this because you had to go to like UCLA and rent a print of it and have it projected by a member of the film department, and he paid to have that done, and because he'd always wanted to see it, and it was going to inspire his Crazy from the Heat movie that was never made.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll have to check them out and see if he can.
But yeah, you can actually watch it. But it does pop up on YouTube though.
Oh, does it? Okay,
great.
All right.
The great legal loophole of YouTube.
Yep. Yeah. All right, man. So we're going to give. Look, guys. Sorry if you were very eager to see us review Guest House Parody. So, there's not a lot you can really say to it. You know, it's just, that's why it's sort of, well, that's why it is lumbered in with our discussion at the start about the iTunes store and the music downloads. But, yeah, what would you give it out of 10?
I give it a 7. I got a lot of laughs out of it. I just didn't think it was as funny as the TV show. If it was like the TV show, you know, I might have earned like an 8.5 or a 9.
Oh, really? Okay, so you really like the TV show.
But I did get some big laughs, especially when they do just beating the hell out of each other and all, you know, crotch grabbing and everything else.
I would say to you, grab the live shows of theirs in. I think you will like them.
Okay.
Yeah, because it's none of them is recycled jokes. They're all new productions, and all the violence and stuff is still there, and also all the and it's also set in the apartment setting as well.
Okay.
Yeah. But me personally, I'm going to give this a 8. I still thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really, I still like it. And that's for a film that's 20 years old, or coming up to 20 years old, it's not bad. A lot of comedy films don't really hold their humor after the amount of time. You know the jokes and you get them and you go, okay. So, you know,
yeah.
Got it, whatever, no worries. But
it also has no relevant reference to its time. You know, there's no allusions. There's no Y2K jokes or anything dumb like that, you know, would age the film poorly.
Well, I don't think Edmondson and Mayall are really that sort of guys who are referential to the times that they were shooting something.
Yeah.
You know, they were never sort of, I mean, like the young ones. Yeah. You can still watch young ones now. That show's, 30-something years old, 35 years old.
Yeah, because they mixed different groups, different social groups, hippies and punks and goths and new romantics and serious conservatives, and it's all mixed in the one
socialists,
thing.
Socialists, yeah, Alexei Sale, socialist buddy.
Yeah, you can tolerate the 5 minutes of Alexei Sale in every episode.
Yeah, who I used to like his show Stuff that was out in the. I think it was about 86, 85, 86, I think it came out. About 86. And it used to be really funny, but I wasn't very political then.
Right.
And as I watch more and more of Alexei Sale, I think,
Does he keep mentioning Marxism?
Oh, he's, yeah.
It's like Karl Marx wrote, you know, that sort of crap.
Yeah, he calls himself a devout Marxist socialist. I'm like, oh, God.
Could you be more of a conformist? It was such a relief to see Morrissey come out against that type of thinking.
Oh my God, I mean, one of the last people on earth I would have thought would have come out and say
something
like that. I know!
It's like, I never liked him.
No.
Why is he the savior?
Morrissey, yeah. Yeah. Wonder how his friendship with Henry Rollins is going to go after this.
Oh. you get other sub-activities that won't be happening again.
He can do them with Glenn Danzig instead.
Yeah, but yeah, I don't. It's funny because I don't see when you think about these guys who like worship Morrissey. Now they have to hear this based Morrissey spouting off being all pro Brexit. I've also heard Brian Ferry is of similar political.
Oh, really? No, nice.
Yeah, because some people on Twitter were calling him a Nazi because he supported Brexit.
And oh, I'm thinking, for fuck's
sake! Well, wait a minute.
Psych.
Wasn't Hitler going for the Union of Europe? Didn't he want a European Union?
Hitler was a fucking socialist. Everybody with half a brain and knowledge knows that. Oh my god.
Yeah.
Oh, how they distort the history truth.
Well, because they don't want to admit it. You know?
Of course they don't. Oh, man. Speaking of that, I just recently reread Dinesh D'Souza's Hillary's America. And,
oh, really?
God, that guy doesn't hold back.
Oh, well, he went to jail for some stupid reason that nobody ever goes to jail for.
I mean, he's the same guy who, anyone knows Dinesh D'Souza is an Indian, not, but, you know, Indian, from India.
Yeah.
He even calls them in the book as lazy and useless Indians.
He goes, I've heard him speak on, like, radio shows and such. I read some book he wrote years ago called What's So Great About America. It's actually pretty well written, but it does follow in line with a lot of the type of conservatism Inc. stuff that the Never Trumpers like to bathe in. But, I mean, it's good stuff in there. It's well written. He knows his stuff.
Oh, he's a smart guy. He's a very, very smart guy. I've seen a few YouTube videos of him where people just come at him. Like, social justice warriors will come after him, and he'll just politely listen to them and then just tear him a new one. It's like they just crawl away.
Yeah, he's good. He's good at debating and such. But, you know, for the longest time, he was, like, one of the only guys out there doing that. It was, like, him and Ann Coulter and, you know, maybe one or two others. Now there seems to be more of them with this Canadian professor, Jordan Peterson, is now fighting with the social justice warrior types. And, you know, we had Milo for a cup of coffee. You know, he doesn't seem to be doing as much these days, Gavin McInnes and such. But, you know, it's grown.
Well, Facebook have throttled Milo's page. They haven't stopped it, but they've throttled access to it because I used to see it every single day.
Yeah. Oh, it's shadow banned.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. And, I've just grown sick of Facebook, John. I really have.
Yeah, I fucking had it with them. It's just, if it wasn't for the podcast, I'd probably be a blank space on that.
Well, my timeline.
Shut my account off for a month and then go back for a week. And
well, I haven't posted on my actual timeline for over a month. I'm like, I've got nothing to say. It's like,
yeah.
Yeah, what am I posting shit for? Just what, for likes and comments? Like, yeah, I'll post something in the group, I'll comment in the group, you know, reply to someone here and there, but most of the time I'm just doing other things. I'm actually living, you know, going outside,
right.
take the dog for a walk, get some sunshine. Yeah.
It's well, like I talked to Ronan Rowe last week. I hadn't spoken to him in over a year or so. I haven't spoken to him since Prince died. And, I was talking to him. He deactivated Facebook like over a year ago, maybe 2 years ago, and he said he's so much happier now that he doesn't have Facebook.
Yeah. Well, I haven't been on Twitter for over a year and a half. Nearly a year and a half I've been off Twitter. I'm like, nah. When they block me for 12 hours and said, oh, we need your phone number to reactivate you, I'm like, shut up your ass. I'm not doing it.
Yeah, they go to hell.
Yeah. I mean, always.
Yeah, Twitter, I would not care if they shut down my Twitter. I would not be hurt at all.
Nah, careless.
It's not a big factor. I talk to some people like, you know, there's certain individuals like we've had on our show exclusively on Twitter because they don't want to deal with Facebook messaging. So, that's about all it's good for.
I barely check the MMC's Twitter feed these days. I'm like, I might jump on once a week, if that. Just,
and what are you gonna find out? Tila Tequila's following us or whatever, you know?
No, who knows?
Is she even allowed on Twitter? I don't know.
Who knows? Who cares, really?
So she went all Nazi Hitler or whatever the hell she thinks she's doing.
Yeah, but all right, friends. I think we'll say goodbye to you for this week. So like I said, there's no Hunter. Don't come to us saying, "Oh man, is he gone? Is he left?" He's getting married and he's having his honeymoon and stuff. So,
yeah, the man has a real life to maintain.
Yeah, there are, contrary to popular belief, we don't sit here and edit shows all day, every day, and go to some massive pre-planning product. No, there's none of that. There's just like, here's a bit of a behind the scenes. Hey, guys, what are we doing this week? Let's do this. Okay, see you then.
Yeah. That's it. This goes out to people wondering why, like, there's guests that want to come back on, but it's like, the problem is we do so much last-minute planning. It's almost like, if we have a guest, it's because somebody we grabbed, like, 5 minutes before the show is recording.
Yeah, pretty much.
I'm totally honest. I'm being totally honest about that.
And there's also many times as well, when somebody, one of us, drops out the last minute.
Yeah.
Most
that,
likely
that
me.
Constantly.
Usually me, it is. You know, like, other times I've said, guys, last minute, can't do it. You guys run it.
Right.
So, yeah. Or Hunter, or not you so much. Your attendance record, John, is pretty impeccable, but mine in the last year has just been shite. It's been completely terrible. Just fucking life's
usually
getting
away. The only thing that'll cancel me out is something like a martial arts class.
Or an Elroy screening. Yeah.
Yeah, an Elroy screening will kill it if we do a Monday night thing. So, you know, it happens.
Yeah. All right, then. Okay, well, we'll call it a day for today. And as usual, when he's not here, I'll imitate him and say adios.
Yeah, and I'll say my new sign out. That's about all. Peace out.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. For more information, go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. For feedback, comments, or show suggestions, go to midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like what you hear? Head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Hear us on Stitcher Radio. Head over to Stitcher.com and download the app. Want to help the show out? Head on over to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Find us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Like us on Facebook. Head over to Facebook.com. Type in Midnight Movie Cowboys. Hit the like button over there. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and find the links from there on the right-hand side. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.